I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Today is Memorial Day, and I am ably assisted by the memorialist, Father Garrett Burns.
Hello.
And the weekendist, Father Drew Hoffman.
College.
Today is also, I have to point this out, you have shamed me into knowing this. Today, May 29th, is the 13th anniversary of my priesthood.
So there it is.
In the Father Bernie episode, you said it was May 27th.
Turns out
I was wrong. I looked, and on my calendar, I have it marked May 29th, 2010. Today is my anniversary.
Well, happy anniversary.
So I am much closer to knowing that thanks to your guys's shaming me.
Most of the things I know in my life are because Garrett bullied me into...
Isn't that the truth?
It's powerful.
Yeah, it is.
It is a powerful motivator. Well, in honor of our guest today, we are naming our studio after Blessed Michael McGivney, founder of the Knights of Columbus, because we are blessed by our guest, Father Mike Baldwin. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
I know you have a devotion to St. Michael the Archangel, but we've already used that name once before.
I know. So. I'd already planned that. But you were going to skip my saint.
Well, I had to go look up, try and find another Michael.
There are others.
There are others, but every time you Google St. Michael, all that comes up is the Archangel.
Archangel.
But there was a bunch of them, but Michael McGivney was the only one I'd ever heard
of. I like
of.
Michael McGivney.
He's a good one.
I think that's a good one. I'm Miguel, very proud
pro.
To be in his chapel. Mm-hmm. There you go, pro. Oh, yeah.
Well, it's Memorial Day weekend, as we mentioned, and so we just finished up with ordinations for new deacons.
They're so beautiful. Ordinations are beautiful, aren't they?
We're laughing because we're recording this in early May. So
it'd be great went terribly or something like that.
Tell me what you thought about the bishop's homily, Drew. What was the most salient point that you heard during ordinations of bishop's homily?
I wasn't expecting all the props. That's what I guess surprised me the most.
The puppet. It was the puppet.
And then the banjo was also, it was peacefully done, but it just surprised me.
If that happens to come to pass, there can be no questioning that you are a prophet.
I'm going to see if he'll do that.
Yeah, that's right.
Just try and encourage him beforehand. Just show up with a banjo and hand it to him. Bishop, you're going to need this. Yes.
Trust me.
Well, as a priest, I always think of Memorial Day weekend in association with ordinations, because we've done that in the diocese for a long time.
A long time, but not forever in my memory.
You would be the one. You would remember otherwise. And then as a kid, Memorial Day weekend was always like, that was the true start of summer. We were always doing like starting vacation. So I don't know if that was normal for our family. But when I think of Memorial Day weekend, honestly, I think of like the mountains or going to the lake or things like that. Oh. You guys have any Memorial Day things that are evoked?
Not a lot, honestly. I'm not the memorialist, I guess, because I don't remember much.
I take it back.
It's close to my birthday, so maybe I have some like connections with that.
Close to my priestly anniversary, I found out.
That's right.
I'm the same way. We wouldn't really usually go places. I remember going to the lake once over Memorial Day, but no, not necessarily. You hang out and you sleep in and grill out in the backyard. Those types of vibes for sure. But no, I don't have a lot of like, we're not real lake people. And so it doesn't really, just a day off work, honestly.
In my early childhood, my mother's family always got together, the whole family, on Memorial Day. There were nine of them married with lots of children. And we were one of the smaller families with six.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was fun. Always fun.
Would you gather in Girard?
Girard.
Okay.
Just sometimes at the park by the pool.
Oh.
You know, the park and the pool.
The park, yeah. The pool. There's not multiple probably, in Girard.
No, there is probably the only pool in town, not just only public pool.
Oh. Yeah.
Unless you count that little wader that we had in our backyard.
You grew up in Girard?
Well, early on in my childhood, I did, yes.
You guys kind of moved around Southeast Kansas area a little bit, didn't you?
Well, we went to Salina when I was in fourth through sixth grades. I go by grades, not by how old I was, because I don't remember. And then we moved to Coffeyville, stayed there the rest of at the time.
But you have a lot of family in Girard. A lot of your mom's family there.
In Girard. Still a few folks there in Girard. Yeah. Quite a few.
Mike and I were down. He was my pastor. I was his associate down in Pittsburgh. And it seemed like every third family he was related to. I mean, just in that area. And you had such a large family through Girard. You had a lot of cousins and relatives in there.
I remember us standing on the stairway to the field at where they were having, I think, the pickup football. I don't know. What they call that first thing of the year?
Oh, the kind of scrimmage, the blue and white scrimmage.
Blue and white scrimmage. There we go. And people would come up the steps and I'd say, Chad, this is my cousin so-and-so. Chad, this is my cousin so-and-so.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of like that.
That's how it was. Well, tell us, or to those that are listening, what your current role is in the diocese, because you're in kind of an unusual role right now.
I have an eightfold business card.
Wow.
You have a business scroll that
pull that out. I am the priest director of the Priest's Retirement Center and the assistant director or vicar for retired priests. But I'm not the assistant director for retired priests, but I assist the vicar for...
Well, that is as clear as possible.
Isn't it really?
What?
You see why I say it? Father Pat York, vicar for priests.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I am his assistant, but my title is assistant for retired priests, but he's not just the assistant for retired priests. See, I mean, he's not just the vicar.
So you're the assistant.
I'm the assistant vicar for retired priests.
Yeah,
it's comma for retired priests.
I feel like you're explaining your family tree in Girard again, where all these branches are interweaving.
Yeah. Kind of sounds like Drew and I's job. We're just associates, something or other. I don't know.
You have multiple titles.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
None that confusing. Is there an assistant vicar for the other, like parochial vicar? That would be kind of funny if one of the guys was just like in charge of the associates. Like he was the vicar for the associates.
Assistant vicar for pastoral vicars?
Or the chaplains. I'd be the assistant. I'm going to officially say I am the assistant vicar for college chaplains. So I'm in charge of Derek.
AVCC. And Grellinger.
And Grellinger. All right, so they're the three of us, but I'm
A-V-C-C.
First among equals.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
this is a good plan.
This is getting way too complicated, and I don't want to begin to try to do the diagram.
I like this. Okay, what does that job entail?
Well, as director of the Priest Retirement Center, it means I listen to all of the retired priests and do whatever they tell me.
I'm sure they never have opinions about anything.
They have opinions about everything. And it's good to actually, mostly my role there these days, we are kind of at our low ebb with retired priests. I was in the ditch when I was ordained. They were so desperate, they would ordain. That's kind of how that worked. So we don't have as many retired guys and not too many of them living at the Priest's Retirement Center. But that center is about 30 years old now and has not received tons of attention through the years. So mostly my job there is working out a plan to make it function a little better. That's kind of what I do physically as well as in other ways.
You think we'll live at the PRC when we're retired?
I hope you will.
I
hope you will bless me every time you go to a kitchen that doesn't have black mold under the sink.
I only will because I know Mike is like designing it. And that's one of his gifts for sure. So it will be well done.
For those of you who are listening, you may not realize, but yeah, Mike is known for his ability in these areas in just understanding remodel and you see colors in a way that boggles my mind when you can walk into a church. And I remember having discussions down in Pittsburgh and I just like, well, that's gray. And you just look at me, that's not gray. That's green. And then you would describe how you just see colors differently than I do, which is a gift.
Sometimes it's a curse.
It has brought a lot more work your way because a lot of people consult you on different projects.
Yeah.
We're renovating our basement bathrooms at St. Paul and our whole basement plumbing. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare down there. Mm-hmm. And we had a tile paint type day, just like an hour. It was the worst hour of the week. I'm saying I had some horror. I'm not joking about this. I had some brutal meetings and that was the worst. It just stresses me out. It freaks me out. I do not have one single opinion on a paint color or a tile. I do not have a single opinion on it.
I have a lot.
I know. It's just such a world that I don't understand.
Well, I'm more like you, Drew. Like that would be a fear of mine is remodels and things like that. I feel like I can pick what I like, but I'm not confident in my taste for that other people would appreciate. But you have a good concept of what works.
It's good self-knowledge, by the way. That what you like isn't necessarily what everyone else likes.
I've been told that about many other things in my life.
I think you have very good taste. It's very you. I mean that in a good
it's
way.
It's very you. That's what you tell someone who doesn't have very good taste, Mike.
No.
It's not me, it's you.
I'm not saying it that way.
Okay, so you're redesigning.
Working on some things, yes.
Refurbishing
We're
that.
We're starting the 1st of June on our community kitchen area.
Which
so
needs
excited
it.
Excited about that.
It does. It's not very functional as is.
I always liked the idea of living at the priest retreat. Like, there's something about that, like, still being with the boys and coming down and having meals together and then doing your own thing. You're covering and the guys are doing their own things, but then always having kind of at the end of the day, maybe, you know, someone's on the back patio.
Or maybe at lunch.
And it works a little different probably for those boys.
It is a little different when you're dealing with retired guys.
I can very easily see you as an elderly priest living in the priest retirement center. That is not a hard thing. Actually, I can picture you living there not as an elderly priest.
No, right now. I have a lot of opinions. I'm pretty grumpy.
Yeah,
this would work.
They'll take care of you.
Yeah.
So what else is on your business card of duties?
Associate vicar for retired priests. That just kind of be the bishop's eyes and ears with the retired guys, you know. Sometimes they have needs that they don't always feel free to express to him or that they haven't expressed to anybody. And you get the news that they need to attend to those needs.
One of the things that I think I think I've told you this before, but is beautiful about that role and I'm appreciative of it is because when priests retire, because we don't have spouse and kids, it can be easy for a celibate man to kind of slip into a place where no one's really kind of keeping an eye on them or helping them. And, you know, as all of us as human beings, as we get older, we need some maybe reminders or some assistance. And priests sometimes can have a reputation of their health deteriorating because they live without that. There's no one kind of that. And that's one of the blessings I think you bring to the retirement center, just in you being you and not just the job, but your natural goodness, but just helping those guys and making sure that they're being heard and getting the things that they need. And that's
sometimes
a great grace in the diocese.
They don't even know they need.
Well, really, that's a reality when we get.
Guys are not real attentive to their health or their
that's
the nature.
That's very true.
So I've heard.
Other priests.
Some guys.
Some have built up habits over a lifetime of priesthood.
I'll look into that more. But
some are hypochondriacs.
So that's your role now in the diocese. Mm-hmm. You've served in a number of spots over the years in Pittsburgh and in Andover. Here at the House of Formation, you were here for a number of years. But one of the interesting things, you were in Andover during the famous tornado.
I was there.
What year was that?
1991.
And how long had you been pastor there?
4 years,
Do you share a little bit of that? Have you guys ever heard that story before?
No, I'd love to hear that. I've heard bits and pieces from you and from others about that experience.
I remember, you were at a play at Capon.
When the tornado hit, I was at Olive Garden on Rock Road with three couples. One of the couples had kids in the play at Capon. And we got banished to the kitchen at Olive Garden. We were sitting on the south side by the windows. It was as sunny as it is today. And we were told there was a tornado warning in effect for like McConnell Air Base. And we ate breadsticks right out of the oven. And we went back in and had our dinner. And we left the restaurant. And as we were leaving, I ran into a couple from St. Anne's that I had known there. And they said, "Oh, Father, are we glad to see you? We heard there was a tornado in Andover." And I thought, they have no idea how big Andover is. So we went to the play, and one of the men, one of the couples that was with us, Ed Seiwert, went out to Andover to check on his daughter who lived in a mobile home, mm-hmm. not in the mobile home park across from the street, thank God. Anyway, Ed didn't come back. The play started. Going in, I had seen the janitor, who was a relative of one of our parishioners, and said hi to him, went on to my seat in the center of the auditorium, both directions, at Capon High School. We keep watching the back door to see when Ed is going to come in so we could get him to come to the seat, and Ed doesn't come. About 15 minutes into the play, the janitor comes down, speaks to the people at the end of our row. They pass it on all the way down to me, and the message is the church and the rectory in Andover have been destroyed by a tornado.
Wow.
Can't imagine.
This janitor's relative had called him trying to reach anybody to let them know their family was okay. So that's how I found out about the tornado. We went back into a classroom and started trying to get the local news on, I think, maybe one of three TVs in the whole place.
Mm-hmm.
This is pre-technology. Yeah.
Pre-cell phone.
The pre-cell phone element of it is the part that's, I think, most shocking to us, because we've only ever lived in a world where you would have known that.
Your pocket would have been exploding.
Right. And,
but that wasn't happening.
Wow.
The play went on and everybody went home at their time and we were still standing watching the TV news. And then we went into Andover that night, or tried to get into Andover. The only place that we could get to was the home of Perla and Ramon Hyzon. And I ended up living with them for 8 months.
Wow.
They took me in, a homeless priest, and showed me beautiful things about their culture, the Philippine culture. Those were rough times.
Do you remember your just first thoughts? Or
I can remember pulling up to the church the night we finally got into Andover about midnight. We sat in a line of traffic, and they weren't letting people in. But because I was the priest at the church there, they let me in. And we drove up to the site where the church had stood. There was nothing left but the choir loft.
Oh, wow.
And on the sidewalk, in the bright lights from the headlights, no other light around, sat the container for the oil of healing, sitting upright on the sidewalk with oil in it. No stopper. It was a crystal, beautiful thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So we started healing.
Mm.
You also recovered your chalice too, and it was bent, but still usable. Is that?
Well, I have used it on a few occasions, like the anniversaries of the tornado.
Wow.
But I keep it now. It was a silver thing, and now it's all black. I just let it get old and grungy.
Mm.
But
that was,
it is what it is.
The tornado, for those that maybe not be familiar with the area that hit it, my tornado classification is a 4.
It's a 5.
A 5.
Mm-hmm. Class 5 tornado.
Class 5 tornado, which is just a monster of a thing.
A monster of a thing.
But then you helped to lead the project to rebuild. And
right. We were actually working on a building project at the time. That's how I got sent to Andover.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Bishop Gerber wanted me. I jumped ahead of the head waiter. In my time in priesthood, there was always the head waiter. He was the priest who was ordained just before the last priest who got a parish. The head waiter always got the next parish. That was the system.
Huh.
And Bishop Gerber visited with me and he said, I want you to go out there. They're building. I know you understand that business. So I want you to be the one there. And you're going to catch a lot of flack from the other priests because you jumped ahead of somebody.
Mm.
But they were very kind to me. They knew I didn't have any control over it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, without giving too much away, I would say your vocation is a little bit different than some of our other guests, simply because you came to it a little bit later, at a later stage in life.
I was a late bloomer.
And so if you would you be willing to share your vocation story with us?
I'll give you a little recap. How's that?
That sounds great.
Okay. Maybe just quick background. I grew up in a very Catholic family, my mother's side. My dad was a Methodist, but not active at the time that he married my mother. And he actually converted when I was a child. I was born in Kansas City, Missouri. We moved back to Southeast Kansas when I was 2. and it was in Girard that he converted. And my mother's family was very Catholic. We went, my dad was very enthusiastic about the faith when he finally caught hold. And so we would go to, we didn't have adoration in those days, perpetual adoration, but we had 40 hours. We always went to 40 hours. I would listen to the Latin songs and I'd come back and do my English equivalent, whatever that was. But my mother's mother was a very holy woman. And I think she inspired all of us to try to be more faith-filled and faithful. At home, I can remember playing Mass. We had a little silver ashtray. These were the days of ashtrays. And an aluminum tumbler. That was my paten and my chalice. And I would pound white bread down to a nice flat round shape. And I was always the priest. My siblings were the congregation. And we would have Mass. And I, again, would wreck some Latin because Mass was in Latin in those days. Uh-huh. I didn't go to Catholic school until we moved to Coffeyville. That was my first experience with a Catholic school environment and with sisters who seemed like kind of strange creatures to me. They wore full habits in those days. And we had a sister in the, it was a 7th, 8th grade combined classroom. We had a sister who was, well, that year she was a bit of a Nazi. She was just pretty strict. We did not hit it off. In fact, most of the class didn't hit it off well. And the next year she came back when I was in 8th grade. She'd been ill at the beginning of the school year for almost 2 months. Came back the nicest person ever and became our favorite teacher. So see there, don't ever write them off.
Hey, that's good. Okay. That's a good lesson.
Yeah. In the 9th grade, I was taught by Sister Paula LaForge, who was my cousin, my 7th cousin.
Jeez, how do you even know that?
I didn't. Sister Paula had done the whole family tree the minute she saw that I had peak background.
Because, this was my experience in Pittsburgh, is everyone's a 6th or 7th cousin.
So anyway, I painted my way through the 9th grade. This is where I got my chops at picking paint colors. We opened the 9th grade, my 9th grade year in Coffeyville. It was only a school through 8th grade. So
this is 19 what?
Oh, gosh. Don't ask me that. I don't. Okay. No, let's see. Okay. I graduated in 67, so it would have been 63, maybe 62. Okay. Oh, when was Kennedy shot?
63. 63.
Okay. So, yeah, fall of 63. Anyway, Sister Paula found out that there were three of us guys in the 9th grade who were painters. And see, because we'd moved into the old school at Holy Name to have the junior high area, it hadn't been used for years. So we painted everything.
Oh.
And we poured paint from one gallon to the other and mixed our own favorite little colors. I made the ugliest pink for the women's bathroom I've ever seen. Painted the whole room, including the windows. They were that funny pebbly glass, and we got a little paint slopped on the window, and we tried to wipe it off, and it didn't wipe off, so we just painted the window.
I think they were still painted that color when I was pastor in the 2000s.
I will tell you, that was somebody else's color. No, that could have been the paint color of the restrooms, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes, yeah. I'm sure it was. Yeah. But you know what? I got the job when Father O'Hare came to Coffeyville. I was working for my dad at that time. I had to break out all of those pebbly glass windows and put new glass in them because he couldn't stand that they were painted glass. Anyway, enough of that. So seminary, I thought about it, of course, when I was a kid with my little ashtray and my tumbler. But in high school, I kind of forgot about it. I was involved in the youth group there. CYO was great. We had Father Joe Gorentz, who was a wonderful young associate. He was a great guy. And we enjoyed CYO. We went to dances. We had sports. We had one-act plays. We had all kinds of stuff going on. I was very involved. I was in leadership with that. But I still had kind of neglected the idea of a vocation. I had discovered God made women. And they were different from men in a delightful sort of way. So through high school, I kind of moved gradually away from being so active. Father Gorentz got moved to Pittsburgh, to Colgan High School. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get a replacement for him. And so CYO kind of went downhill. I did too. I was away from the church for a while when I was in college. I've never heard of that happening.
No, I've
not in college. No.
Yeah. I was away from the church. I tried out some other things. I had friends who were, I had a good friend who was an Episcopal priest, went to the Episcopal church for a while. The reason I left really was because, unfortunately, we had a pastor that started, he was new to our parish, and he started preaching at like 8:30, and he would still be preaching at 9:30. Mm. That was not an exaggeration. Oof. People were waiting outside on the steps to come in for the 10 o'clock mass the 8 o'clock mass as we were leaving mass. So
I didn't realize Bernie Georges was pastor down the coffee bag.
Poor Bernie. Do not give him a hard time. No, this was somebody else. And if it had been an engaging homily like it would be with Bernie Georges.
That's true. There you go.
Then that would have been one thing. But most of the homily was because somebody failed to put their nickel in the little slot for our Sunday visitor. And so he came up like five nickels short last week, and we had to listen to it for 30, 45 minutes. So, well, first I stood at the back of the church. That was where all the cool people were anyway. And then I went out and sat on the steps. And then pretty soon I thought, you know, I'll just bring a book and I'll read on the steps. And then pretty soon I thought, well, if I'm bringing a book, I'll just sit in the car and read. And then I'd run in and grab the bulletin and bring it back, you know, kind of throw it on the counter at home. So nobody knew that I was not making it. And then I just quit. I went to the Episcopal church for a little while, tried that out. And then I was asked to join the choir at the Lutheran church for some kind of special thing they were doing. No, it wasn't the Lutheran church. It was a Presbyterian church. I went there with some friends for a while. It was kind of meh. It all changed when my mother joined the new choir with a new pastor at Holy Name Church in Coffeyville. Father Donald O'Hare came. We had a men's choir there in those days. That was another reason to sit on the front steps at the church. It was down to about four guys whose vocal cords should have retired about 8 years earlier. Father O'Hare wanted a choir, but he wanted men and women. And my mother somehow became the head recruiter. And so she's the one who convinced me I had to come back and sing in the choir. So I went to the choir loft and I sat in the back row, which is even farther back than the back row of the church, actually. And I could bring a book and I could put it in the missalette and I could read in downtime. You see, it was so easy. So I sang in the choir. Gradually, I think more and more, I began to listen to what Father O'Hare was saying, and he made good sense. He didn't talk about the nickels. One morning, a Sunday morning, bright, sunshiny, early summer morning, I went in and knelt at the rail of the choir loft. Everybody did it. I didn't know what you were supposed to be doing there, but I went and knelt down. Just as clearly as if you said something to me across this room, a voice said, "You should be a priest." I was kind of stunned. If I'd been talking to myself, I would have said, "I should be a priest." But this was very directly, "You should be a priest." And my first reaction after I got over the shock was to laugh because I really wasn't priest material. That haunted me. I didn't really know what priests did. So I kind of got to know Father O'Hare better. My dad had several jobs at the church at that time, and I was helping him, so I got to see him more directly. And I just kept thinking about those words, "You should be a priest." That's kind of an unusual situation I've found since. I didn't realize everybody didn't have this. But I think it's because I really needed the kick in the behind to get my attention. I wanted to find out what a priest did, so I kind of got to know Father O'Hare, and I started directing or helping lead the CYO group at that time. I was in college, and, you know, I just got more engaged. One day, it was a Saturday morning, I remember, Father O'Hare needed the light bulb changed in his office. And if you remember that office, it's the one that the secretary's in now. It had a high ceiling.
Yep.
And so I was up on a ladder changing the light bulb, and I looked down at him. This is like almost a year after my "you should be a priest" moment. I said, "What do you do if you think you should be a priest?" Well, somehow he covered his total shock. And he said, "Well, you would probably talk with the vocation director. Let me see." So he got in touch with the vocation director. At that time, it was Bishop Gilmore. Ron Gilmore. So he set me up. I mean, like, this was Saturday, Wednesday. I was in Wichita in the chancery office talking to Ron Gilmore. And by, I think, the next Wednesday, I was in again talking with Bishop Maloney, who accepted me as a candidate for priesthood for the Diocese of Wichita, which tells you right there how different things are now.
It was a faster train then.
It was a fast track. Because they were desperate, like I told you.
Yeah.
Okay. I got the news eventually that summer that I was going to Kentucky for seminary. I was thinking I was going to Dallas. And my family, we had gone to Dallas kind of regularly, off and on. I thought, well, you know, I could come back for a weekend. I was going to Kentucky, where people don't wear shoes. You know? So that was a shock. I can remember driving over to Kentucky and being just totally blown away by the guys at the seminary who helped unpack my car and get me settled in. And I went to the seminary. I had had 3 years of college. They graciously gave me credit for one. Didn't accept many of my credits.
Oh, man.
At that time. And later did. I could have graduated my junior year had I known, but didn't know till day of graduation junior year. Anyway, then I went on to the Mount, studied there for 3.5 years, and was ordained a deacon. And I went back in January to the Mount after being ordained a deacon in the spring. Spent the summer at Magdalen Parish, mowing the lawn mostly, which also tells you a lot about seminary formation in those days. But I had a great time there. Father Steve Baxter was brand new, had never even been to a Catholic wedding, and he was saddled with every wedding in the parish that summer.
Oof.
So I at least had been to a wedding, and I could help him, you know, kind of see what was next. Those were good days. Went back to the Mount after Christmas. We had a 2-week thing. That was so the seminary could charge diocese for a whole semester of education.
Smart.
And then we were to come back to be deacons in the parish where we'd been serving over the summer. But I got invited into the rector's office to sit in the dread red chair. Was that still there when you were there, the dread red
chair? Well, I don't remember a red chair.
And yeah. Chad would have been in it.
That's
probably
a good point.
So,
that's a true point.
Heard, directly from Chad.
Yeah.
Anyway, I sat in the dread red chair, and the rector told me that the faculty didn't feel like they knew me well enough and I wasn't going to be ordained in May. I had the option. I could either be laicized, or I could go to Newark, New Jersey for an unspecified amount of time and work in a parish there with a pastor who had been a previous spiritual director at Mount St. Mary's. Well, you know, those words came back to haunt me. You should be a priest. I just couldn't not go to Newark. So I went, and I was there a year and a half. And Bishop Gerber was installed in 1983, in the late fall, and in spring of 82. And in 83, he came to see me, asked me if, this is March, he says, "I'd like to ordain you in May." I said, "Bishop, you can ordain me tomorrow." So I was in exile from the diocese for a year and a half. It was probably the best experience I could have ever had as a little hayseed from Kansas, being in that inner city with all of its challenges, multicultural parish. It was a great experience. I was ordained in May. Got those invitations. I had to help print the invitations myself.
Wow.
Go to the printer. He said, "The only way I can make this work is if you can come help me." We made it.
All worth it.
It was all worth it. It was a long journey.
God be praised. And so that was, you were ordained then a priest in 83.
Mm-hmm. This year in May.
That's right.
21st, I will be ordained 40 years.
Wow.
Happy anniversary.
No, thanks for happy anniversary to you. Well, yeah. I didn't get to chime in there earlier because you didn't even know I was here yet.
Well, happy anniversary and thank you for all that you have done for the diocese.
Oh, yeah. It's been a great, great journey. It's gone fast. 40 years flash by, boys. You're going to be there at the retirement center.
And we're going to be hanging. You're still going to be there.
In the kitchen that I hope is completed by then.
Maybe. That's a beautiful testament to the firmness of the call.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine there was a lot of moments in your priesthood where there was maybe a like, what are we doing here? That year and a half comes back and the solidity of that and the confidence that would have given you for those 40 years. That's really wonderful to hear.
Yeah, there are good days and bad days like for anybody, but many more good days. I've been really blessed.
Well, and it was a great leap of faith at that moment too, because you hadn't really been to, did you know the priest at all in Newark or?
Oh, no, I didn't know him at all. I didn't know him at all.
Unspecified amount of time.
Right.
Newark, New Jersey.
Unspecified amount of time.
And just to place that in the Lord's hand and to move forward
I've had to do that several times in priesthood.
Yeah.
And God has always taken care of me.
I believe that.
I think that's important.
Mike, one thing I've always wanted to ask you about is, for those of you that don't know, Father Mike, he's just one of the kindest, most hospitable men and priests in our diocese. And one thing I think exemplifies that is, whenever I've got a note from him or a text, almost always it's included in there, you are so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was going to ask you, does that come from somewhere or like why? Is there a reason you,
it does.
That's kind of your sign off?
That's my sign off and has been all of my priesthood. I picked that up from a priest that I was working with in the parish in Newark. He was an associate there. And every time I did something to help him or that pleased him, he would say, you are so good. And then I noticed, well, he also did that with all of the people that he worked with. And I just stole it from him. I can remember, I mean, it really has been early on, because when I was at St. Anne's, there was a wood artist who would carve out letters, you know, like Jesus or something. He made me a little sign for my desk that said, you are so good.
Mm-hmm.
People don't remember that they are so good. Created in goodness by the good Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, even in our worst moments, we are so good.
Amen. Well, on behalf of the diocese, Mike, you are so good.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. And thank you for listening to About 4 o'clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. The final work today goes to our guest, Mike.
Thanks. I'd just like to close with the end prayer of the Litany of St. Francis. I pray that litany every day. I've been doing that since being here at the House of Formation, actually. It goes like this. Lord Jesus Christ, through your loving providence, you chose St. Joseph to be the spouse of your mother. Grant that we may know him as our intercessor here on earth and in heaven. Amen.
See you next week.